Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle in general. I'm Lynn Ware Peak and I'm joined by my co-host Tim Henney. This week we're away enjoying the summer, but we're leaving our listeners with some summer enjoyment as well that we'll broadcast during this hour. First, we'll speak with Eileen Dunn. She's the owner of one of the longest-running catering businesses in town, Done to Your Taste. She'll talk about how things have changed in the world of catering over several decades, and she'll give us some summertime tips for fun food to carry along to backyard barbecues and potlucks. Then it's Brian Benson, writer, adventurer, and ponderer of The Meaning of Life, From a Bicycle Seat. His first book has been widely acclaimed as the, quote, take it with you everywhere you go until you've read the last page beauty of a book. At least that's what author Cheryl Strayed says about it. His book is about a cross-country bike trip he took with the woman he was attempting to woo. What We Do for Love. This is The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW. Stay with us.
The Glittertind at Stein Erickson Lodge is a proud supporter of KPCW. The Glittertind restaurant offers regional American cuisine with Chef Zane Holmquist's seasonal menus. Located mid-mountain at Deer Valley Resort, the Glittertind serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. Sunday brunch with live music. Reservations recommended. 645-6455.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. Eileen Dunn started her catering business about 2 decades ago here in Park City. In town at that time, there were just 4 catering companies. Today, there are many dozens, but Dunn to Your Taste still thrives as one of the premier caterers. Dunn is joining us today to talk about how food trends have evolved over those decades, how a catering company develops along with a changing demographic and population. She'll also give us some summertime menu tips for all those backyard barbecues and potlucks that we all at one point or another end up being invited to, only to wonder, what do I bring? Eileen Dunn, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much, Lynn and Tim. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
It's great to have you. You have had, well, one of the longer-running catering businesses in town, Dunn to Your Taste. Give us a little history of when you started and how things were back then.
Well, Lynn, if you remember, I started it when I was working with you at the River Horse Cafe, and that was at least, you know, 20 years ago, and started small out of a one-bedroom apartment on Park Avenue. And now we have our large place out in Camas on the Mirror Lake Highway. It's the old Mountain Air that was out there. We've been in that spot for 12 years. When we started Dunn to Your Taste, I was one of 4 caterers in town. And now there's about 38.
Wow.
But some come and go. And, you know, we've been here for a while and love it.
What was the motivation for going into catering from what you were doing before? And what were you doing before you were catering?
Well, back when I went to school, I thought I was going to be a hotel manager. So I went to school for hotel and restaurant management and started out here actually working at the Stanford Court Hotel in San Francisco, which basically was sister companies with Deer Valley Resort. So I was there, loved it, 5-star hotel. I was on the hotel side, and there wasn't really movement there because people loved working there and stayed, so there wasn't a chance of really moving up. So I asked for a leave of absence to come out to Park City, Utah, and work at Deer Valley, and fell in love with Utah. So then Deer Valley took over the management at Stein's at that time, and they offered me front office manager. I came out very happy about it and all excited, and realized I didn't really love the hotel side of things. And you think back in, you know, college, I got all the great grades in all the cooking and anything to do with the food, anything to do with the restaurant, but I was going to be a hotel manager.
That's right, and, because when we're in college, we don't take those things as clues, do we?
We do not. We do not. We have one thing in our, you know, now,
only your,
that goal.
Your parents take those things as clues,
right,
not you.
Right. And so when I was here working at Stein's, I had just tons of dinner parties and a lot of friends coming over, and was definitely playing the hostess a lot of the time. And friends just said, "Eileen, you should start a catering business." And that's really how it started. And I had great support from Deer Valley, from Stein's, and when I worked at the River Horse, from Diversified Restaurant Corporation. They were all very, very supportive.
Mm-hmm. So back in those days, when people were looking for things to be catered, I would imagine it was mostly weddings. But I might be wrong. What kinds of things were you catering then?
Well, actually, it was mostly the second home clients. It was definitely social. It wasn't so much as weddings as maybe the new places that were developing here. You know, we did a lot of things in Bald Eagle. And we had some great, great clients that were actually referred to us by Deer Valley, Stein's, et cetera. So
that's pretty interesting, because I would have thought that it was the opposite, where it started off with these typical catering things that you think of, like weddings, and that the second homeowner, you know, private chef thing has evolved more recently.
Well, with me, it started by referrals from, you know, Deer Valley. So that's who their clients were.
Right.
So I was very, very lucky to start my career out with those types of referrals.
I remember running into you at lots of different nonprofit fundraising events.
Yes.
You seem to do that early on, and I'm sure you still do, you know, Summit Land Conservancy, which at that time was conserving our open lands. I encountered you there, and so I would run into Done to Your Taste Catering at those sorts of things.
Yeah, that's very true, because in Park City, there are a lot of nonprofits, and we try to help out whenever we can. So we do quite a few of the nonprofit events, and we're happy to do them, you know.
And so also you must see insides of homes and also venues that most of us never get to see. So do you have favorite venues that you like to cater at?
Well, we love all our venues for sure. Utah Olympic Park is great. We do some big events at Snyderville Basin. We did the 500 people sit down to dinner without the kitchen for the big International Ski Hall of Fame.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was really great. Then we have some places outside of Park City, like Rendezvous Ranch. We do High Star Ranch. We do Johnson Mill.
Basically, I've never even heard of Johnson Mill.
We basically cater any place that doesn't have their own food and beverage department, you know, inside, in-house. For instance, well, when Promontory started, we did all their catering until they got their food and beverage online. Mm-hmm. Tuhe and Talisker until they got their food and beverage online. You know, things like that.
And beverage is a big part of it, isn't it? By being a caterer, do you have a license that travels with you to private events, or is that an issue at all?
Well, what happens is if it's a private party, you do not need a license, but you have to follow all the rules and have liquor liability. But when you have a liquor license, it belongs to your address. So catering, we travel. If it's not a private event, we get a event permit or a liquor license just for that one event.
And is that an easy thing to do as a caterer, or is that something you take care of?
Well, we have our clients do it in their name sometimes, or we do it ourselves. A caterer, we're only allowed so many a year,
right,
so we can't use them all, you know, all up. So it depends. But Sundance, we always do quite a few, you know, during that time. And there are only so many days, so you may have to use up three.
Right.
You know, during Sundance. So
as a chef, trends change over the years. And it seems like, you know, what you would want to be doing is always being on the cutting edge.
Right.
But how has food changed, really, in all of those years, the 20-some years you've been catering? You know, you've gone through the gluten-free and the vegetarian.
And raw.
Raw, that's right.
Protein.
You know, superfoods, protein, all that. It really has changed. In a way where it's definitely more wonderful vegetables. Everybody is more health conscious for sure. What I see is definitely going more towards the proteins and vegetables and really staying away from the starches and the breads. I mean, I think everybody is doing that. We always design our menus around lots of vegetables. You know, definitely the vegetarian or the vegan can definitely have something to eat if we do a large buffet or any of our menus. And also we do the, you know, the gluten-free,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then, of course, we offer the raw food, the real done-to-your-health type things. And sometimes we'll do, you know, a lot of menus will be 20-80, maybe 20%, not the healthiest, but people love it. You're having a party. They're celebrating. It's, you know, it's an event. And 80% real healthy.
Right.
So it's a 20-80 rule.
It must be interesting trying to suss out what your client wants. So they call you up. Hi, Eileen. I've got 50 people. I'm going to have a party. And obviously you're not going to say to them right away, like, well, how healthy do you want to be?
No. No, you really find out the background. You find out what the party's for, who's, you know, who's going to be there. Is it children? Is it more elderly people? Is it a bunch of guys that just got off the mountain on a, you know, a big mountain bike ride, or a big construction company finishing a house? Everybody really likes different things and wants a different type of menu. So you really talk to the person to find out what they want to accomplish at the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are they looking for? Who are they feeding? And then we go from there.
Okay.
Is your business still by referral primarily? Is that where you see that, you know, you'll do somebody's party and then you'll get referred by them to other clients?
Well, that's definitely how it all started, years ago.
Can you track that anymore? Are you so big now that you really can't keep track of where they come from?
No. We definitely try to keep track of that
because
it's really important just for marketing purposes and things like that. But we do a lot by referral, and a lot comes through to us through our venues. And then it's basically the website.
Because with 38 or so caterers out there in the community, when there were only you and three others when you started, that's kind of a different, you know, terrain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the population has grown.
Right.
There are a lot more, you know, guests and people in town or that come to visit.
Do you think there's enough for everybody in the catering business,
or
there are those who won't be here in a few years?
Well, definitely
it's
some.
Always the case.
Yeah, definitely some have come and gone.
Right.
And a lot of our clients will definitely, you know, try the new kid on the block, of course. But happily, some of them will definitely come right back to us. So we're lucky in that. I feel like there's enough to go around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I'm in a lucky, you know, situation. And we've worked really hard for the last, you know, 17-plus years.
How big is your staff now?
Well, we go from a kind of core of 20 up to 100.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big
business. So Sundance is 100. The other night, we had 76 people on.
And are these people who, you know, they cater with you as kind of a sideline because, or is it full-time for your core 20? Probably full-time for the core 20. But what about those additional 56 that you brought on for this event the other night? Are they working at, you know, Grappa and River Horses, managers and bartenders and,
yes,
servers?
So basically, the real core, I mean, I have core 20 that are almost working full time, but it's more like 12 full time. But the extras are just professional waiters and bartenders in the business that I've known, you know, for 20 years. Mm-hmm. During Sundance, we have about 8 people that come from out of town. Actually, we have more. We have probably about 12 people that come from out of town. Mm-hmm. And they stay at Hotel Don Melendez. There's people all over the floor. Just kidding. No, there really is. We're working so much, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, and then I have situations with different banquet places like Deer Valley or, you know, Stein's, where I can pull from them and we kind of help them out and go back
I would
and
think
forth,
during so. A time like Sundance, when all the restaurants are booked and, you know, everybody's on at the restaurants to begin with, and then you're trying to pull people and create a group of 100, and all the other caterers are probably trying to do that too, because if they're not going to be busy during Sundance, when are they going to be busy? That must create a little angst and stress and putting those schedules together.
Well, it does. I mean, we definitely work very hard at it. We've been doing it for quite a few years, so we kind of have it, you know,
have
down.
A leg up.
But it's still a challenge. It's still a challenge because you have to make sure they're qualified. They're very, you know, good. You have to know them. You have to check out their references. So, you know, they have to have their food handlers. They have to have their tips serve safe card. So you have to do a lot, you know. And we have them do that all over, you know, online. If they're not even in state, they do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of people come out just to, you know, for the winter, and they just want to work during Sundance. So sometimes it's just people that just want to work during Sundance,
right.
And that's it. And they're here to have fun, and they're here to, you know, ski and do everything else. So they kind of make a trip around it. I have some friends, some people that are managing hotels, and they work up in Lava Springs. And they come down just for a few big parties. They come down during Sundance, and then they stay for an extra couple weeks and ski.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
And they're great because it's really slow.
Destination work trip.
Right.
Exactly. So let's move into a little talk about food. It's a backyard barbecue, potluck season. I don't know about anyone else out there, but I know I have these few go-to things that I take to every potluck. Yeah, right. Well, mine in the summer, it's my mango, jicama, cilantro, sesame salad.
Yum. Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, that sounds really good and fresh.
We all need something new. Right. You have a go-to one, Tim?
Yeah, mine is basically whatever I can pick up at Whole Foods out of the deli cabinet.
Got
without
it.
Too much struggle. I like that turkey curry that they do out
right.
there, and that's an
right.
easy one.
Yeah, that's very easy if you pick it up.
I can throw that into my own
right.
bowl and like...
right. You know, when you think about, as you say, you also wonder what you're going to
right.
take to a backyard
right.
barbecue, but I don't know, give us a few ideas about fun things that may be new trends.
Well, you know, to me, it'd be just something, you know, really fresh. If I was going to a barbecue tomorrow, I'd probably bring, you know, definitely some type of vegetable. It might be a really nice beet, goat cheese salad.
That's always good.
You know, something like that. But then I'd also might bring chimichurri flank steak. So chimichurri, it's so fresh with the cilantro and lime and garlic. And it has that really, you know, summery fresh. Okay, so I might do that.
I've never heard of that before.
Chimichurri?
Yeah,
it's basically a really fresh green like salsa or relish or marinade, and you can put it on before and grill it, and then you put it on afterwards also. And it's cilantro, lime, garlic, green onions. It's just, it's wonderful. It's just really fresh
mm-hmm.
and green tasting.
Right, okay.
So, yeah.
And this is the big thing about backyard barbecues. In fact,
right.
I went to one last night
yeah.
and everything was so fresh.
Yeah.
And even though you say you may be eating red meat,
yeah. it's,
there's still
right.
something that can be fresh about it. I had
right.
arugula on
right.
a sirloin steak and it was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So talk about flank steak. I've wondered about that and how you make it really tender, because I always think of flank steak as being like the cheap steak to buy that's really tough, but I know I'm wrong.
Well, marinate it the day before. You can just do a little bit of olive oil and garlic and or chimichurri or any of your other favorite marinades and grill it. And the thing is, it's not to overcook it.
Is that the
as
one
long
that you
as you
slice?
Overcook, you slice it really thin on a
thin.
Bias.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that
And
steak.
It's very tender. It can be very, very tender. It's not really, as long as you don't overcook it, it's fabulous.
That's one of my favorite
yeah.
steaks.
Yeah, it's good.
Do you have anything that you is sort of your trademark dish done for your taste these days?
Well, we still do the chips.
Well, I was going to say the
we
chips.
Still do the
I
chips.
Remember the
we
chips.
We still do the chips for
the
20
green
years.
And red
yes.
And blonde yes. chips, right?
Yes. So those are still, you know, really popular. We send those all over the country. But I think.
Wait, what are the chips?
You know, the five flavored tortilla. Oh, you know.
I know. But I want our listeners to know.
The five flavored tortilla chips. We do a chipotle, a spinach, a serrano. And corn and just another chili.
And you make those?
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
How
and
many
we fry
do you
them
make
and really.
Day?
We don't make as many as we used to. But what we do is we have certain days where we make them and then freeze them all and then cook them before parties.
Right.
So, and chips don't, people aren't doing chips as much as they used to, you know, just for some special events. And once they have them, they love them.
Are those chips? Some of them would be gluten-free because they're vegetable, or do they have flour in them?
The corn ones.
Corn dough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, they have flour. The other ones have flour in them, too. So.
Right.
They're not on our Done to Your Health side of the menu.
Yeah. I like them because they have so much salt on them.
Yes.
And big salt.
Yeah, we make. Yeah. That's what makes them so good.
What are some odd food combinations that are going together now? And I'm wishing I could think of an example. But, for example, putting salt together with fruit, or I've seen
yeah.
peanut butter and strawberries lately, stuff
or the,
like that.
Or the spices in dessert, you know, the that's the thyme and basil and things like that with desserts. So
right.
that's still going on. And, you know, the flavored chocolates, we make our own chocolates. So the chili chocolate and the raw, though. They're raw.
Raw
so, yeah.
chocolate.
Yes.
How does that go? How do you do that?
You melt it so that it doesn't go over 118 degrees. You do it with coconut oil. And so there's no dairy or butter. And you do it with the raw cacao. So it's very, very dark. And then you can add We used to add agave, but now we're using stevia. Mm. It's supposed to be, it's definitely supposed to be a little better for you. It doesn't do the glycemic
index.
Jump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we do it with that. And then we add, you know, we could have goji berries or sun-dried cherries or almonds, you know, all different types of things.
Great.
And we make little boxes out of them. And the thing about them, they're fabulous, but they don't hold up in a warm room.
Yes.
Because it has, you know, such a high melting point. It's
right.
It's real easy.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah.
What else? Any other little tips you might give us for this upcoming 4th of July weekend?
Well, I know everybody's doing, you know, quinoa and stuff like that, but we do a quinoa pink lentil salad with a lemon vinaigrette, and then we make it into lettuce wraps. So if you want something fresh and fun, you know, lettuce wraps. Another big thing we're doing is our lettuce wrap bars. We had a big, big wedding of 575 people the other night. It was about 2 weeks ago. And we did a huge lettuce wrap bar, and they loved it. And
what
it was
were
very
some
unusual.
Of the wild things, the unusual things on there?
Well, it was for a lot of people didn't even know what lettuce wraps were at this event.
Uh-huh.
So it was fun to tell them, show them how to make them and, you know, put everything in it. But we actually had, one was a hoisin chicken with cashews and, you know, rice noodles and a bunch of little, you know, vegetables in that. And then we had all different types of lettuces, bibs and radicchio and romaine. And so it was really pretty. And then we did the chimichurri beef. So it had that real fresh cilantro lime flavor. And then we did the quinoa salad. And then you have all these little toppings and mm-hmm. spicy toppings off to the side. And it's just really fun. And considering it was so warm at this event, that it was really refreshing. At that
sounds like
do you
fun.
Ever think about the possibility of doing takeout? Or do you do takeout? Or is that something?
We do.
You do?
Well, the thing is, Dundee Taste, we specialize in our service and our presentation.
Right.
So we don't do a lot of takeout. We absolutely do. You know, that's actually how I started. I mean, I started doing the you know,
kind
the small dinners,
catering.
A takeout type thing, or the full meals kind of ready, heat, and serve.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really more doing the larger parties and not, you know, the smaller takeout things.
Eileen Dunn is the owner of Dunn to Your Taste catering company that's been around for over two decades. And have any great 4th of July plans yourself away from the catering world?
Yes, I'm going to be there at the parade at a party on Park Ave.
All right.
And
we'll have a great celebration.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's good to see you guys.
And this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Summer is here at Utah Olympic Park. Olympic-sized adventure awaits you on the zip lines, alpine slide, adventure ropes courses, and the always popular Summer Comet bobsled ride. Don't miss the Flying Ace All-Stars freestyle show every Sunday at 1 p.m. The park is open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with activities available beginning at 10 a.m. For activity tickets, season passes, and more information, go to utaholympiclegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Martina McBride at St. Regis Big Stars Bright Nights Concert Series. Thursday, July 3rd, outdoor at Deer Valley. McBride kicks off Independence Weekend. Concert begins at 7 p.m. Gates open at 5:30 p.m.
This is for all you girls.
For Martina McBride tickets, call 655-3114. Park City Institute, entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998, supports KPCW.
And welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Brian Benson had a fill-in-the-blank liberal arts degree, a million vague life plans, and zero sense of direction. So he sets off on a grandly imagined, poorly planned Latin American backpacking trip, during which he meets and falls for Rachel, a self-possessed Oregonian living and working in Western Guatemala. When Rachel mentions that she's always dreamed of bicycling across the U.S., Brian asks to come along for the ride. His book, Going Somewhere, A Bicycle Journey Across America, is witty, thoughtful, sincere, and relatable. And it's the book I'm taking on my next armchair adventure. Brian Benson is joining us to talk about the book. Brian, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Great. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, it's great to have you. And I guess I want to just start with the cover of your book. It's an endorsement by Cheryl Strayed, who, as most people know, wrote that bestseller, Wild, about her trip hiking along the, oh gosh, what's it called? The Pacific Crest Trail.
Yep.
A couple of years ago. She calls it a tender, sexy, take it with you everywhere you go until you've read the last page, beauty of a book. And literally in the first 10 minutes that I opened it up, I was laughing and I was remembering times in my life like these that you're having. But it starts off in this great little town in Guatemala, Xela or Quetzaltenango. Talk about, it's so important that we start off, it's not the bike ride we start there, but it's the story and it's all about Rachel.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for that. I'm so glad to hear that you've enjoyed the initial parts of the read. And yes, as you mentioned, it does begin pretty far from the bike trip, actually. I guess this is about a year and a half or so after I had graduated from college. I had no idea really what I wanted to do with myself. A lot of big ideas, you know, vague ones, basically, about where I'd like to go. But no conviction or ability to really choose. So, you know, a friend and I had decided we were going to backpack from Mexico to southern Argentina. And we made it about a month before I realized that I kind of hated backpacking. You know, it was just so full of choice. And
it makes your hips hurt.
I'm sorry?
And it makes your hips hurt.
It does, yeah. yeah, you know, it was just I felt pampered and like I wasn't enjoying it at the same time, which made me feel even worse. And so I stopped in this town, Quetzaltenango or Xela, a city in the western highlands of Guatemala, just not really sure what I was going to do, but I wanted to find something to focus on. And pretty quickly, I ended up going to this jazz show and meeting a woman named Rachel who was singing in the group. And, I mean, just an absurd situation. You know, she steps up, has an amazing voice. I totally fell in love with her right away. And you know, she was so focused, is so focused, and knew exactly what she wanted to do. And what she wanted to do and mentioned pretty quickly after we met was that she wanted to take a bike trip across the U.S. I'd never thought of doing that before, but I wanted to be wherever she was. And, you know, I'd never met a risky adventure that I didn't like, so it seems like a great idea.
I love that, the things we do for love. And I just, to give our listeners a sampling of your writing, when you first talk about Rachel, you say this. You say she was unfairly, disorientingly attractive. Silver blue eyes against olive skin, watercolor collarbones over a silky sub-collarbone swell and a downright mythical strawberry blonde mane. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I hope she enjoyed that description as well. But yeah, I was so taken by her right away.
Well, Brian, I was just going to ask, as you're describing this, isn't this kind of like you're 1 year out of college? Isn't it every college guy's dream come true to go backpacking through Latin America or, you know, South America and stumble upon somebody like Rachel
to fall in love
at a jazz bar? I mean, seriously, how often does that happen? Are you just describing, you know, every guy's dream come true?
And that was so much of the initial appeal, really, was just that it felt like something out of a movie, out of a story, you know, like that kind of thing doesn't happen. Usually if I meet somebody, it's like in a crowded bar and we have an initial conversation that goes kind of well and then it just doesn't work out. But this actually, you know, was that kind of thing where I was just questioning over and over again, like, did that happen? Is this really happening right now?
And then it almost seems like you're telling more of a, well, obviously, I mean, every story is, you know, there's a context for a story. So your context is this bike ride and adventure that you never envisioned yourself taking, but you also didn't envision yourself falling in love and meeting somebody like Rachel the way that that happened. So is it a love story and a relationship story that you're telling via the bike adventure?
You know, I think it's that in a sense, but I think it's a few different stories that are going on. You know, one is definitely about that and about, you know, a relationship over time and over this bike trip. But it's also for me a story about direction and about moving forward and trying to figure out how to do that. And, you know, once we actually got into the trip, which again I decided to do because of Rachel, I really grew to love it. And it ended up teaching me a lot, are pushing me to think a lot about how to make choices, how to move forward and figure out what it was I really wanted. So I feel like those are kind of dual narratives that are running throughout the book.
So was Rachel sort of the primary focus in the beginning? You would do anything that Rachel wanted to do, and all of a sudden you found yourself embarking upon this thing that you never imagined that you would do. And then once you were into this other adventure being the bicycle trip, things shifted. There must have been, it sounds like there was a shift maybe, or more of a balance. Something came into balance, but Rachel didn't, she wasn't the focal point.
Yeah, you know, it did shift over time. When I met her, she'd been in Guatemala for quite a while, and it very much was her turf, you know. And I visited her in Portland as well before actually going on this trip. And again, it was her place, and we'd never really been somewhere that I felt like I was rooted, and it was my spot, you know, and my identity. And so I always felt like I was playing catch up with her, and had a lot of insecurity about that actually. And we spent a little bit of time in my small hometown in northern Wisconsin before the trip, which really did serve to equalize what I'd been feeling a lot. And then once we got out on the trip, there were some parts of it that I just liked more. Like, I didn't really care as much about being filthy and headwinds at certain times, at least. And so it started to shift the balance in our relationship. You know, I feel like relationships outside of bike trips as well, of course, are always this kind of shifting balance of affections, right? Kind of depending on where each person is at individually and how things progress between them. It's not like a power dynamic necessarily, but something like that, right? And I feel like the environment of being on the trip started to change how we interacted.
And what happened with the relationship with Rachel once this shift occurred and things started to change? Did it just run its course, its natural, organic course?
Well, it was a difficult thing to manage and to figure out because, like I said, I'd been really used to following Rachel, to pursuing her, you know? And I also was, you know, very attuned to and constantly thinking about my privilege as a man. And being with Rachel kind of, in a very individual way, flipped it on its head a little bit because I didn't think about that as much with Rachel. I always felt like I was like she was so far ahead of me. And, you know, being out on that trip reminded me that just by basic biology, I had a ton of privilege out there. It reminded me of a lot of things I maybe wasn't thinking about. So there's all sorts of things going on that I was trying to manage as our relationship shifted. And it went through a lot of different changes over the course of that ride, definitely. We, you know, at a certain point actually started talking about some of those very small, difficult to talk about things like, you know, the speed that we were riding and how to make little decisions and bigger ones. And, you know, I wouldn't say that anything was solved, period, by one realization, but it was just, as in with any relationship, I think, a lot of conversations that needed to happen and learning how to talk about them and how to have them.
Okay, Brian, you and Tim, well, Tim will have you talking about relationships all day, but I want to talk about the biking. And it was funny because when we talked about having you on to interview you, I wrote Tim this email and it's kind of, you know, we live in Park City, Utah. Everyone rides their bike. In fact, some people probably have ridden their bike across this country in 10 days. You know, everyone's kind of extreme and they do all this stuff. I myself rode my bike across the country and through Wisconsin when I was in college. But at the end of the day, none of us wrote about it. And you capturing these experiences on the bike and starting with the one that... You talk about all this, you know, trauma that happens to you and all these things that you eat and the exhaustion. And then you end by saying, and it was only 8:42 in the morning.
And yeah, I remember that day really clearly.
And so where did you start in northern Wisconsin? What is your hometown?
My hometown is, well, I actually, Conover is the street address, but I kind of live between three small towns up there. My folks have a house that's in the woods and a lake, as a lot of places are there. Mm-hmm. And it's between Conover, Eagle River, and Land O'Lakes, which I should note is not the butter. That one's in Minnesota.
Okay.
And all very, very tiny towns. Conover itself is unincorporated. There are no stop signs, stop lights. You have to slow down to 45 to go through it, but that's about it.
And a lot of folks here are acquainted because they do the Berkey-Biner back in Hayward and Cable.
Oh, yeah. I've done the Cordelopet a couple times, and my dad has skied the Berkey year after year.
Great. Okay. So is it somewhere near there in northern Wisconsin?
Yeah, you know, we're just, we're probably about 2 hours northwest of there. Dead center in the state and just below the border with the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
How much do the mosquitoes weigh in your woods?
Oof. Yeah, they're pretty bad right now. I mean, they're terrible. You know, there's shirts all over the place that say Wisconsin State Bird, the mosquito, and with good reason. But it's not just the mosquitoes. You know, we have a diversity of awful insects. We have mosquitoes, the black flies that come in, horse flies, deer flies, gnats, bees, nociums. You know, it's just the bounty up there. It
sounds
really
delightful.
Exciting.
You wonder why everybody doesn't live in Wisconsin.
But it's usually the beginning of the summer, and summers there are glorious. You know, it's just so many lakes up there and so much hardwood forest, and it's, there's a reason that, I mean, my town is a huge tourist town. There's a reason that so many people come up there.
Yeah, we don't know about lakes and lots of vegetation here in Utah. Well, I want to ask you about the memoir, writing a memoir. And I have to say, I was inspired by sort of a similar memoir back in the 80s that inspired me to get on my bike and ride. It was called either Miles to Nowhere or Miles from Nowhere.
Yeah.
It was an amazing book. I'll never forget it. And I have a feeling, I'm taking your book on vacation next week, and I have a feeling you're going to inspire me to, say, quit my job and get back on my bicycle. But it's all about writing the memoir. So many of us have great experiences. We want to write our memoirs, but you have done it. What particular inspiration did you get to write it? I mean, you're a writer, that's what you do, but you hadn't really solidified this this sort of career path at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I really wasn't a writer. I'd never thought about doing any kind of creative writing before writing this book. I mean, I'd done a little bit when I was in Guatemala. I got to work on a magazine there. And I've always loved journaling and writing, you know, profusely long emails. But I'd never really considered, even come close to considering writing a book. And what happened for me was I'd been journaling a lot over the course of the trip. And for so many reasons, was just really enjoying it, and was so immersed in the moments and everything that it was doing for me and to me. And there was this one day in northern Idaho, close to the end of the trip, when Rachel and I had been at a microbrew festival the night before that we had just happened upon. And long story short, we got invited into the tent by the volunteers because we were so excited to be there and really overdid it. So the next day was very slow. It was super muggy, and we were, you know, both tired and hungover, and riding on a busy highway, like potholed. And I just remember thinking that even though I felt just gross, and now that we weren't talking to each other, I was happy, really happy, because I knew what I was doing, and I knew why I was doing it. And, you know, especially given the years of kind of existential aimlessness before then, that felt really, it felt powerful. And not just for me, I'd had so many conversations and have continued to over the years with so many people, especially in my generation, who are just overwhelmed by choice, you know, and by the breakdown, I think, of this, if it ever existed, this idea of what it means to become an adult and what the steps are logically to moving forward. And it felt in this very fleeting way like I had something to say about that with this trip. And That was the big idea that I had. And then, you know, I tried to sit down, and the third day that I was that we were off the bikes, I tried to write about it. And I wrote a couple pages and was really excited about them. And then I rewrote them for like 2 weeks and then decided that I sucked at writing and should never do it again. So that was the beginning of a very long process.
Oh, yeah. Our guest is Brian Benson. He's the author of the book Going Somewhere, A Bicycle Journey Across America. It's a memoir.
So, Brian, your journaling that you just mentioned, what is your journaling about, this beginning of your writing? Did you journal to kind of cover the entire spectrum of the human experience, or were you delving into areas because, you know, you were experiencing discomfort in the relationship with Rachel, or you were experiencing wonderful expansiveness in the whole adventure and the relationship? What was driving the journaling?
You know, so depended on what the day was, on how tired I was, how much time I had, what I was excited about or aggravated by in the moment. sometimes the most intriguing thing for me looking back was what I didn't write about, because even in my journal, I lie to myself sometimes, as I imagine many people do. And, you know, there were points where things with Rachel were sort of coming to a head and we were having a lot of difficulty, where for days I just, like, didn't talk about it. And I remember it very clearly. And then I'd finally have, you know, admitted to myself in the journal. But so some of it was about our relationship. Some of it was just gushing about the amazing things that had happened, you know, play by play of meeting a really, really generous person who did some unbelievably kind thing for us. Sometimes it was about the scenery. Some of it about, you know, my anxiety about the horizon and what was in store and not really knowing what to make of it. Also Galen, who a friend of ours who's biking at the same time and who plays pretty heavily into the book, is this kind of like nemesis slash superhero. who's an amazing guy and a close friend still. But you know, journaling about comparing myself to him and the way he was doing it and if his way was better than mine. So yeah, you know, day to day it really shifted, but I'd always, you know, detail where we started, where we ended up, what, you know, it's just some events from the day as well.
I have to just make a point about Galen. He's kind of my superhero because you mention, and I've never heard anyone mention this before, but he's playing Silvio Rodriguez covers. Mm-hmm. Silvio is like the greatest Cuban, or well, the greatest artist of all time in my opinion. From Cuba, but
I
love that.
Telling that you said that. I was just watching a World Cup game with Galen about 20 minutes ago.
She'll
be really excited to hear that.
So I'm wondering, Brian, when I did the similar trip, I broke things into states and mm-hmm. what it was kind of general impressions I got about each state. Did you have a favorite state? And if so, why? Or what were some of those observations? I think it's such an experience of our country, really.
Right. Yeah, I have such a hard time figuring out what my favorite is because when I was in each state, it was just so immersive, and there were very few that I wanted to get out of. North Dakota and Montana were maybe exceptions, although I loved those as well. I think, you know, maybe Idaho would be the favorite on the trip that we took out there. I've since done some other rides, and there are other states I've fallen in love with, but Idaho was just amazing because we had been in Montana for something like 3 weeks, and it was grueling. It was amazing as well. You know, we stopped in Glacier for a week and met some really amazing people. But when we got to the Montana border, or sorry, the Idaho border, we were really tired. Had been doing a lot of biking, a lot of headwind, a lot of mountains. At the border, we met this Quaker couple at an Amish bakery. So keep track of that. And they, after talking to us for 4 minutes, offered to let us stay in their house in Coeur d'Alene that they were not even going to be at. They just told us where the key was, which was a pretty amazing introduction to the state. And then to leave Montana, we climbed up this big, big uphill, got to the crest, and then bombed downhill into Idaho. So, like, our welcome to that state was just a huge winding downhill into a really deep forest, churning rivers, and then we just had so many amazing things happen to us once we got into that state. So many great people offering things, and the scenery was just gorgeous, and you know, we met up with Galen there eventually as well. So I just remember that everything going right in Idaho. So I think it was partially about the state, and partially just, you know, serendipity and things really working out there.
And also, after 3 weeks in Montana, you enter that part of Idaho, the Panhandle. It's only going to take you a couple days to go through there. That may have been an upside.
There was something nice about that, because I do tend to break up. I know that the state boundaries are totally arbitrary borders in most cases, but it's something to shoot for, right? You need to be able to segment it and have some kind of an achievement to look forward to.
So, Brian, the bike journey itself was a transformative experience for you, which the readers can find out about by reading your book. What about the writing of the story, from the journaling and the attempts and distilling it down to the concepts that you wanted to convey? Was that a transformative experience for you as a person?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for asking that. It was as much as, or maybe even more than the bike trip itself, because, you know, in the moment, it was all very visceral, and I didn't have any kind of distance from it, any critical distance at all. And so in sitting down to write this and try to figure out how to turn it from a series of journal entries into a story that, you know, would actually have a narrative to it and would hopefully be something that other readers could place themselves within and see themselves in, it just forced me to think a lot about what was important about the trip, why it was, and not just about the trip, but how it connected to other larger questions that I had. And so as I wrote it, I mean, it affected decisions that I was making in the present as well. You know, the way I was reflecting on the past really had a pretty big bearing on the choices I made during the writing process, which involved, you know, stepping away from a job that I loved, involved, and again, I apologize, you mentioned that you might step away from your job and just, you know, producers, sorry. Take no responsibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, doing that, taking another long bike trip, and really just committing to writing. I mean, what I ended up finding from the process was that, you know, just the idea of finding some far-off horizon to go towards, to aim for, and then just adjusting to the miles as you're moving toward it, until you look up and there's a different horizon entirely. It's just something I've thought about a lot in writing about the trip, and I feel like it's come up in my life over and over again as well.
Mm. Well, all of these observations that you make with words, most of us only make them sort of in our heads, and they're nebulous and not well-formed. And so I want to thank you for writing this book, and I can't wait to get into it, and just wish you best of luck going forward in your writing career. And what's next on your plate?
Well, what's immediately next is that I am, first of all, thank you so much for that as well. Really appreciate those words. What I'm preparing to do right now is I'm actually about to hop on a train this Saturday to head back to Wisconsin, where I'll be doing a month-long book tour by bike.
All right.
So I'll be starting in that tiny town in northern Wisconsin with a reading on July 1st, and then for the next month, riding around Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois, stopping in about 10 different places to do readings. And it'll be about an 800-mile ride, I believe. And really, I'm so excited about that just because, you know, as you know from bike touring, you get the chance during the day to have all this alone time in your head. And for me, at least, by the end of the day, I'm just so ready for extroversion and to talk to people and ask questions. And I find that I'm just so much more curious and open when I'm biking as well.
Brian, I wanted to tell you this. In our generic tag line for the show that we do, The Mountain Life, we have little things that we go back and forth and say, and one of them is from bike fit to relationship alignment. And your story fits so perfectly with that.
Yeah, it really does, oddly.
Well, Brian, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. And
yeah, Tim, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. And again, that was Brian Benson, his book, Going Somewhere, A Bicycle Journey Across America. What a great book. And a great writer. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Kevin Stocking, president of Heber Valley Bank. We offer a full spectrum of loans for lots, construction, HELOCs, commercial, and personal needs. Our loan decisions are made locally. Heber Valley Bank is a proud supporter of KPCW. We are located in Heber City and Midway and at Grand Valley Bank in Park City. HeberValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Your daughter takes a fall on her bike, and you're not sure what's really going on with her aches and pains. I'm Dr. Lisa Saturnino at Intermountain Instacare. We gladly accept walk-in patients. No appointment needed. Our Instacare in Park City is located at 1665 Bonanza Drive. We have a new call-ahead number to reserve an arrival time. Call 435-649-7705. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Want to wish everyone a very happy, jubilant, and safe holiday weekend coming up. Thanks to our guest, Brian Benson, and also Eileen Dunn of Done to Your Taste Catering. Also want to thank our underwriters, Park City Clinic, Berkshire Hathaway, Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa, Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, and Vinto Pizzeria. As always, you can access archive programs of The Mountain Life. Just go to kpcw.org and click on the Shows tab and The Mountain Life.